Rick Sanchez here. This is Direct Impact, and this is some of what we're going to be talking about. What you were just hearing there is metal scraping against metal. What you saw is a Chinese Coast Guard ramming the Philippine Coast Guard. Or was it the other way around? We're going to try and figure this out. It's an international squabble at sea. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do this. All right, I'm going to begin today by showing you this skirmish, which I just referenced a little while ago. It's a skirmish at sea. It's taking place between China and the Philippines. And what you're going to see here is what appears to be the Chinese coast, what that looked like to me, I don't know. It looked like the Chinese Coast Guard rams part of the Philippine Coast Guard cutter. This is happening as the two nations continue to battle over the rights to the infamous and very disputed area known as the South China Sea. Go. Did you see that there? So you can kind of tell where that scrape takes place, right? China's Coast Guard says the Philippine ship was illegally stranded at the Sabina Shoal. That's that it was deliberately rammed the Chinese vessel. The Philippines says, no, it was the other way around. You guys rammed us. Either way, why is this happening? All right. In the South China Sea, there are a series of about 100 small islands, right? So let's take a look at this map. There it is. About 100 small islands in there. They sit between China, the Philippines, Malaysia, and Vietnam. See them right there surrounding it? Why is this so important? Well, let me tell you why it's important. It's one of the most important military and commercial shipping lanes in the world. It also contains some of the best fishing waters in the world. Oh, and did I mention it's extremely rich in minerals and gas deposits? That's why everybody wants it. Now, China's been pretty smart about this. Let me tell you what China's done. They've been almost very Machiavellian about what they've done in this area. They have been creating new islands and expanding the ones that are already there. Many of you that didn't grow up around water maybe don't know this, but a shoal is like an island that's underwater. So it's like a coral reef. All you gotta do is pour some cement on top and voila, now you have an island. Now you can say, oh, but that's part of my territory. I created it. That's how the Chinese have been claiming a lot of this part of this and calling it Chinese territory. Let's talk about this. Scotty Francis is an award-winning international war correspondent, geopolitical expert, and she's good enough to join us now. She's filling in for Manila Chan. So, Scotty, what do you make of this ongoing dispute and this latest between the Philippines and China?
Well, from my readings about this, it looks like a small nation is being pushed to clash with a big nation called China. And just as you mentioned, Rick, it's $1 trillion worth of trade passage. So this is not new to see the West and the American media and the Western hegemony's eyes are all around this out of the blue. I mean, it's not like they're coming to save people or really like make everything here injustice. China's being really a grown-up about it. I think China's leadership does not really want to be humbled by a fight with a much weaker adversary, let's call it like that. But if you look at Philippines, internal politics in Philippines and what the midterm election is going to look like, it looks like very main for this small nation. And things are getting tense and tense more. Day after day.
And they get a lot of pressure from the West. There's no question that the Brits and the U.S. and the French are constantly in there telling them, don't worry, we have your back. Be careful when you're told that the West has your back. Learn from the Ukraine experience. So it's an interesting scenario. Okay, so here's another one. With 61 days left before the presidential election, the U.S. Attorney General is now coming out and warning Americans about election interference. And once again, he is specifically mentioning Russia, China, and Iran as potential culprits. And then he goes on to name some influencers allegedly connected to RT who were secretly or surreptitiously allegedly paid to propagate information that could affect how people vote in the upcoming presidential elections. That's what it is. Okay, here's Merrick Garland. He is the Attorney General of the United States, who could have easily been the Supreme Court Justice, by the way, and probably would have been a good one. Here he is explaining it.
The American people are entitled to know when a foreign power is attempting to exploit our country's free exchange of ideas in order to send around its own propaganda.
Fair point. He's absolutely right. Nobody should try to influence U.S. politics or any country's politics or U.S. policies with money. And you've heard me say on this show over and over again how important it is to be honest and to be transparent, which is what we do here. It's what I do every day. It's not my job to shill for Donald Trump or Kamala Harris. My job is to call them as I see them. I'm like a referee, an umpire. It just so happens that recently, as I'm sure you've probably noticed, I've been calling out Mr. Trump more because of some of the ridiculous statements that he's made about crowds, comparing himself to Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King, and talking about how Kamala Harris looks. You see this script? This is my script. You know who wrote this? I did. I wrote this. I get up, if I have to, at 5 in the morning to take care of this. Nobody writes my material. Nobody tells me what to say. And if Russia or any country pays people surreptitiously to go on the internet or on Facebook or something and to say good things about one candidate or one policy, okay, fine. They should probably be called out for it. But there's something else here that needs to be said. If Merrick Garland is going to talk about foreign interference, damn, man, shouldn't he also be talking about that two-ton elephant in the room that's sitting there right in front of them? I mean, it's right there. I mean, if he wants to talk about a country interfering in our elections and our foreign policy, should he talk as well about a country that is literally buying our politicians with money? Benjamins? I mean, this is not about Facebook posts. This is worse, I think. Look at this headline. U.S. lawmakers received more than $58 million from Israeli lobbyists last election cycle. Why do you think they voted against the ceasefire? In fact, the article goes on to say, I mean, it goes on to, the article goes on to point out, interestingly enough, and this is kind of fascinating. It says that during the first 6 weeks of its war on Gaza, members of Congress received, on average, $125,000 from pro-Israel lobby groups. I mean, just to be fair, I mean, if you're going to talk about interference, then shouldn't you talk about that too? Doesn't consistency matter here? I'm just asking. It's my job. Gadi, you want to weigh in on this?
Oh, yes, I do. I mean, Rick, when you talk about countries interfering in other countries' elections, I don't know any election that happened in the Middle East that didn't involve an American diplomat directly choosing and telling people who to vote for. I mean, this has been branded and made in the United States of America. Meddling in other nations' internal politics is an American brand. And it's very surreal to see that coming from the United States in a way. And one more thing, speaking about the AIPAC and the money that it has spread all over America. I mean, if influencers that work for RT or influencers or Iran and China and Russia are altering the American politics, they're starting to really sound like totalitarian regimes that talk about conspiracies. You know, it's very surreal and funny for me. I mean, we hear this here in the Middle East. I mean, you know, we don't hear these kinds of conspiracies in the nation that says it rules the world and is the strongest and it spreads democracy, you know?
So that's funny. As soon as I read the story, I saw on your expression, you were like, are you kidding me? Do they know yeah. what they've done in the Arab countries, in part of the Middle East, for example? And that's funny. That's not the first thing that came to my mind, but you're saying that's probably what would come to the mind of the average Middle Easterner.
Oh yeah, we have people who are branded and made in the American embassies. For example, in Lebanon, we have ministers and Congress people, you know, and in parliamentary elections, everything is manipulated and sometimes even funded in the American embassy in Lebanon. They even they talk direct local politics, like vote for these, not these, because this is what we want from Lebanon.
Go ahead, finish.
So it's really funny to look at the Americans not liking that. I mean, it's like, if it's true, it's a little nice to see them taste their own medicine for a change. But I really doubt that that's happening.
It's interesting. And that's why we have you on, because that's a perspective most Americans wouldn't think about. By the way, I've got a follow-up today to an announcement that we reported here yesterday, where, remember, the British Foreign Secretary came out and he said he's cutting off some of the arms shipments to Israel. He did so because he said there's reason to believe that Israel may be committing war crimes, or at least it's suspected, or being accused by the ICC and the United Nations. But now here's the follow-up. Soon after that decision was announced, according to reports, somebody in Washington apparently picked up the phone and called the former prime minister, Mr. Rishi Sunak, who then went on the parliament and said this.
The government has suspended 30 of the UK's 350 arms export licenses to Israel. It's a decision that the chief rabbi says beggars belief and will encourage our shared enemies.
This is a serious issue. We either comply with international law or we don't. And we only have strength in our arguments because we comply with international law. I appreciate the party opposite didn't think that international law mattered.
I do love that about the British Parliament, the way they go after each other that way. I do like that. By the way, so here's what we're learning. The reporting is that somehow the potential ceasefire deal would be affected by the UK withholding any of its arms shipments. Therefore, the US is telling the Brits, don't do that because we're on the brink of a ceasefire and you guys might screw that up. Gadi, do you buy that argument?
Well, because it's home and the blood is really big and the casualties and the loss of human life is really tremendous. I can't but really be frustrated when I listen to Rishi Sunak say shared enemies. These weapons are bombing hospitals and schools and kids playing. Are these your shared enemies? It's very frustrating to hear that bite. But on another note, you know, coming from our previous discussion, Rick, I suppose maybe someone called someone in Washington, someone who pays that someone in Washington.
Interference? What interference?
I don't know. Well, that might have happened for the $58 million or $1 billion that have been spent, you know. I mean, it's worth a phone call sometimes.
Do you think, by the way, one final thing on this. When you hear them say they're on the brink of a ceasefire, I don't know about you, but I've heard this so many times now. I mean, the more they say it, the less I believe it, right?
What ceasefire is really jeopardized by less weapons anyways? What kind of logic is that to start with? How does less weapons, how does giving less weapons make a ceasefire jeopardized? I'm not really
It's called new math. It's new math.
Yeah, so special kind to start with. But to speak to the point that you have mentioned, Rick, no ceasefire is foreseen because the impunity is there, and Benjamin Netanyahu has only one way to go. If the war stops, the Israelis overthrow Benjamin Netanyahu. We have seen that in the streets. So I think the only way for him is to keep going and maybe praying that the West would be all dragged into a war with Iran and somebody changes the sequence, you know. But a ceasefire, if it was attainable, we would have seen it the first time Antony Blinken came to Jerusalem. I don't think the Americans really can do much with Benjamin Netanyahu, or they're complicit.
They're either complicit, which I'm not sure, and, you know, I still believe in my country, and I think in the end we want the right thing. But I do agree with you that if nothing else, no matter what they say to Bibi Netanyahu, he's going to do whatever the hell he wants to do. So that's, I think, what is happening. And he can, because there's a lot of people in Congress who are beholden to the money that he gives them for their campaigns. And that's just a fact, okay? Gadi, it's a pleasure to talk to you. What a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. Thank you. Let's see. Hopefully we'll be together again having another conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks.
When we come back, we're going to keep our finger on the pulse of everything taking place in Ukraine. A lot going on there, obviously. Independent journalist and U.S. Navy veteran Sarah Bills is going to join us to discuss the future of the conflict. Where's this going? Are they close to maybe? We'll talk about that. Stay right there. So welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm joined now by Sarah Bills. She's the co-founder of the massively popular platform DD Geopolitics. Good job with that, by the way, Sarah. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Scary times right now for big platforms like us, I guess.
Well, yeah, you want to be, if you want to trust anybody, you should trust independent journalists as much as possible. Sometimes it's not easy to be able to figure out who's actually independent and who isn't. But given what's going on in the media right now, the CNNs of the world, the Fox Newses of the world, and all those other cable channels and more corporate channels, they should start to at least look over their shoulder a little bit, wouldn't you say?
No, not the CNN. They're the arm. That's the arm of the state. They'll be fine forever. The only time they ever really get disciplined is when their reporters kind of go a little rogue and maybe say something mean about Israel, and then they yell at them.
Do you really?
Sometimes they get fired.
By the way, this is actually. I'm glad we're going to go there. I know we got to talk a little bit about Ukraine, but I'm glad I'm going to, because your show is one of those that people trust because they know they're getting just the opposite of what they would get on a CNN, or to be fair, a Fox or any of the others. But do you? I work there, so but I want to hear your perspective. Do you think they do that because they're told to do that, or how then does it become ingrained in them so they say all the right things that would represent the will of the State Department and the other institutions?
I think through self-censorship and them censoring you, you eventually become conditioned to the things I can and can't say. Those things, I mean, I think of it in a way as Twitter terms of service. Eventually, I'm going to start saying the things that stop getting me in trouble. So I learned and I conditioned myself to speak that way. I do think that there are people that hold some of those opinions. I mean, there are still your true blue liberals and neoconservatives that subscribe to those ideologies. But I think it's a little bit of both, for sure. I mean, you have to be sort of that type of personality for them to even want you to be a presenter on their channel. So
yeah, and these are people who worked their whole lives. They thought the dream come true would be to work at CNN. They're not going to let it get in the way. And then CNN, in the case of anchors, pays them very well. I mean, if you're making, you know, Anderson Cooper kind of money and you're making $20 million a year, it's pretty hard to not say exactly what they want you to say. That's pretty damn good dough.
That's the other part of it. We live in, obviously, the West in a capitalistic society. It's hard to find people that aren't motivated by or that need money. That's the thing. And you know, people, it's funny because I made a joke when the sanctions came out and all the rumors about who's getting paid and who's not. And I said, you guys are getting paid? And all the followers said, well, that's why we like you, because you're not getting paid.
Right.
And like, I think that those kind of things kind of shine through. So the people that did get sanctioned, and I'm not talking about the RT people. I'm talking about the rumor mill of people taking money and on Twitter.
Influencers. I still don't know what an influencer even is, but go on.
Same. Yeah. I don't really know people that get their politics from these people. It's more of a culture wars commentary. So I'm really confused by the entire thing. You mentioned something about Israel paying our politicians, but it was funny because I read an article and it was very mad about the sanctions for Russia. And then they said, well, why won't the Democrats sanction Iran? Because they're working interference. And I'm like, oh, so we have this time it's Iran and Russia instead of China and Russia. But nobody's talking about the enormous elephant that is Israel.
It's crazy. I mean, you can't make this up. It's like sitting right there and they're going like, what elephant? I don't see an elephant. It's like, they literally own the politicians. They own them, and let's go to Ukraine. So here's what seems to have happened this week. We're seeing now a trend where many very important members of the Ukrainian cabinet are quitting. They're just saying enough is enough, including the guy who was responsible for going around the world telling countries why they needed to support Ukraine. I mean, it doesn't look good when your head cheerleader quits. Who's left to cheer, right? Not to mention the situation that's going on with this incursion into Russia does not seem to be making any headway. Not to mention the fact that the Russian military is pushing past the Donbass now and is about to take the main hub for the entire country. So you put all that together, it looks like something's starting to break here. Like they're getting to the point where it's almost, Sarah, I would say, and then I'm gonna let you talk, it's getting hard for Ukraine not to come to the table with some kind of terms. Do you agree?
I do agree. Zelensky's finally coming around. I think that he said today that it's okay if Russia is a participant in the peace talks. So we're making progress. He's going to let Russia attend their own peace talks right now. I really think that Kuleba is the most major resignation. I think he left because of his kind of clashing with Yermak.
And he's just for the benefit of the viewers, he is the foreign affairs person for Ukraine, Dmytro Kuleba.
And so Yermak is much tighter with Zelensky. And I think right now we're kind of like Hitler in the bunker a little bit.
Yeah.
And only the people that are closest to him are going to be allowed to stay in that bunker. And the rest are going to get tossed to the side eventually, regardless. So
what was the breaking point then? What was it about Dmytro Kuleba? What was he mad about, or what made him move, or what made him do this?
Well, it's the corruption, number one, which he tolerates a good bit of it, but it gets overwhelming. He's also makes him look like he's in poor standing when he does go to foreign dignitaries and diplomats and request things and ask for them. So it's actually also designed to placate the public and create this illusion of change, because the military situation facing Ukraine is incredibly dim.
Yeah.
They give a little bit of a distraction as well. It's really the same people that are continuing to hold power. It's just a rotating door, but Kuleba's exit is a big deal.
Do you think he is affected or upset perhaps over some of these moves, like the Kursk incursion, for example?
I don't think that he's mad over the political moves, but yes, I think that a lot of the politicians are upset about Kursk. I always think that it's more so because that the gravy train is eventually going to stop running, and these sorts of stupid tactical maneuvers for PR victories are only making the end come quicker, I think. And that they don't want to miss out on their pocket.
And what you mean is those 10, 20, 30,000 troops, who knows how many that have gone into the Kursk Oblast, are like essentially stranded there now. I mean,
they are.
And are you surprised that the Russian military hasn't gone in there and annihilated them and just said, okay, you want to stay in that little area? Go ahead. We've got other things to do. We'll come back and take care of you. Don't worry. Seems to be like what they're saying, right?
They are annihilating them in that area. There's no mercy in that Kursk area. There's a lot of surrenders. There's women in there that they've allegedly found. But the order came through that they are not to treat foreign mercenaries by the rules of war, by the laws of war. And that, you know, like basically these people are invaders at this point.
Yeah.
So they are mopping up pretty well. But at the same time, they are taking their fair share of POWs. So
you feel bad for them, don't you? I mean,
terribly, terribly. I mean, and they're left in mass graves. They're left there with no burial. They're left there with nobody will come get them because Zelensky won't pay out the dividends that are due to the widows. They'll just be labeled missing.
Oh man.
And so it's terrible. We think of these things that are for PR wins, and people forget the human aspect of it. There's people dying on both sides. There's civilians that are caught in the crossfire. There's a lot of things happening in Kursk, and obviously the people that are suffering the largest losses are the Ukrainians.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks that way, and you're right. It is a human tragedy, no matter how you look at it, outside of the geopolitics and everything else. Sarah, you're such a delight to talk to. Thanks so much for sharing, and good luck with what you guys are doing, and don't take a check. Just kidding.
Avoid the sanctions, everybody. Have a good weekend, Rick. Thank you, everyone.
That's our show. Remember to always be looking outside your own box. Thanks for you for being there. And always remember that truths don't live in boxes, as we like to say. By golly, I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll be looking for you next time.